They need to learn how they are bigger, but come back and take care of those parts. Mm-hmm. And to be fully with them, I love you and I want to take care of you. I want you to thrive. And that's the inner lover. I talk about this mm-hmm. today. It's not the inner masculine, it's like your inner lover. How does it take care of yourself? Before you have your moon time, you know, buy everything in the fridge for it to be ready so then you don't have to go out that day. You know, and so I have my inner lover loving me so much. He wants to offer me the best. Mm-hmm. The more you are doing the work without life needed to shake you to do it, better it's gonna be. Mm-hmm. So let's do the work today.
Yes. What can happen when a soul or a human being finds his purpose and his thing and how it changes us, how it's... Wow.
Yeah, that's one thing we can add for the woman that wants to find the partner, or, you know, of their life, is to find their purpose and their drive.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you will always feel bored, or you will always, like, roam around your life trying to, you know.
Would you take us in your reality back then when you were... this old version of you, and then maybe was there a moment of changing? Was there something happening or something that changed and that lead you into who you really are and this woman that you created today? Thank you so much, Lula Loba, for visiting my podcast, my Who Are You podcast. It's the first interview for me in English, so thank you for this opportunity. Mm. The first question that I always ask people is, who are you?
So surprising, thank you. I like that, who are you? Yes, it's such a beautiful question because I think everybody will come with different kind of concepts and philosophy and where you are in your life. For me, it's very important to empower beings to reclaim their unique essence of who are you. I'm not like, yes, I'm consciousness connected with all, you're all one. I'm like, yes, in one state of consciousness, that is true. But embodiment is my medicine, you know, like really getting so intimate with life, with, you know, those little parts in me that are, you know, my inner child and the emotions. So yes, you can find a space that is bigger, that is watching, observing, taking care, that is unconditional love itself, that is taking care of this. Who is Lula Loba? You know, who is this archetype, this identity I've created? Did I create this? Or that was just, you know, kind of my soul having a mission on this life that decided to embody that archetype, which means La Loba is the wolf woman, is the wild woman in this essence of like coming back to this authentic, raw energy of being embodied in a body in Mother Earth and being, like connected with all of this matter, my sexuality, my life force, and to really embrace it and release the shame, the conditionings, because at the end of the day, you know, the spirituality, I find it a lot of freedom in it to be able to get to that space of healing, of loving from this space that is bigger and unconditionally loving, meeting the parts of me that had judgment, that had fear, and it is beautiful. But for a long time, I dissociate myself also, being like, this is all illusion, like this fake humility, you know. Oh, I'm not even, if you will, rejecting any identities, becoming no one. And I'm like, this is so boring. Mm. this is so plain, and all, you know, entering the stillness, and you're all calm, and I'm nobody, and I'm like, no, I want to choose to play with life and bring, you know, all kind of experience. And so, yeah, this came to me. I didn't really choose, you know, it just came. My brother called me Loup, which means wolf in French, when I was like maybe 12. And
it's your artist name.
It's not, yes, it's my business. Yeah. I'm Laurie Grenier.
Oh, wow.
So it's a French name, very French name.
Wow.
Yes. So my brother started calling me like this when I was 12. But still, you know, school called me Laurie Grenier, and some people in France call me like this because, you know, they saw my name at school and stuff, but really doesn't feel like, this is my inner child, Laurie. You know, when I connect with her, she's Laurie, you know?
Yeah.
And Lou is more like, you know, the identity I'm playing in this life to empower. It feels more powerful, you know, when I'm calling myself this, because it means wolf, you know, I enter that space of power, which is a supportive identity, you know, which is why, but it's not really a choice, you know, it's like something that is there in my essence, my soul, you know, of those things finding me little by little in my life. And, you know, somebody told me, oh, you should read that book, you know, Woman That Runs With The Wolf. And I started reading that book, and in it there was La Loba, the wolf woman, and I was like, ah, that talked to me so much, you know, chills everywhere. And so then when I decided to build my business, I called it this way, and, you know, everything kind of fell into that, of the embodiment of the white woman that is untamed and authentically myself, you know. I'm not trying to be anybody at the end, but it takes a form, you know what I mean? It's like I'm not trying to be anybody, but the form of my authenticity is wild, is unapologetic, is my body saying, no, I'm leaving conversations. I don't justify myself. And it took years of practice, you know, unfolding all the fears of my inner child, wanted to be loved, of this toxic spirituality that kind of like made me doubt, you know, like, oh, I should be unconditional loving to others and non-violent communication and all the things you learn, you know, through personal development, that feels like the path to take to release the patriarchal society conditioning fears, to become this enlightened, compassionate Buddha being, you know? So all those things, shedding the layers, finding myself, choosing what I want to keep from this, what I want to release from those. And I found this flame inside that is none of any of this, that is not external, that is not somebody telling me what I should be, what I should do, what's the best, you know, it's inside, like, is my body a yes? My body a no.
Mm-hmm.
And then following that, and fortunately, I found more and more now sisters or beings that are supporting me in that journey, because this is not that often. You're meeting people that really empower you to be unapologetic and take full responsibility for their own triggers, the mirror of you, what, you know, and being able to watch those parts and be like, okay, does that belong to me? And not, yeah, all the time being advising, projecting, oh, you're this, you're narcissistic, egotistical. I've heard a bunch of different things to my path of empowerment, of being wild and me, and trusting that this is the best for the greatest good, not only for me, finding my truth as I unfold all the things I'm not, but also knowing that if that is my truth, then it is better for everybody else. Yeah. Even if it hurts, even if for some people that will be disturbing, that they won't understand, that is not who they're meant to become in this life, so they don't understand, and it's fine with me now.
Yeah, you teach us this at the Women Festival, and you said otherwise you wouldn't believe in their own power if you just people please them or just stay in the relationship because you don't want to hurt them. You said something like, maybe you can speak about it. When we do this, we don't give them the chance to be in their own power and to believe
exactly
they can live their who they are, who they really are. Yeah,
exactly. It's like I'm taking responsibility for your feelings because I don't believe that you can handle the pain, handle the wound of something awakening from my unapologetic presence that is true and that is heart-centered. You know, for a long time, I feel it's fine, we're human, we're making mistakes, but for what I'm empowering people to do is to go towards their truth, no matter if they do mistakes. Because I went from a place of being completely inhibited.
Because it's the first time, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the first time in this life that we experience it.
Yeah.
So we have to.
So the first mistakes. No, the first like, oh, stop, I don't do this, you know, and this person is going to be so... You know, like you see this disappointment in the eyes of people, you see the rejection wound coming, like I'm an empath, I feel everything, and I've practiced for years because I'm a therapist, so it's like I've practiced being with the person so much that I understand everything that they're feeling compared to whatever situation. And so I do feel everything in the other person rising, and I also do see where they are in their journey and if they have the tools or not to deal with this yet. But you can still see the higher self, the soul that is so perfect and in alignment in every moment. If this person needs to leave that initiation right now, it's because they have the capability, or they will meet the person, or they will suffer so much that they will get help. Or sometimes, and that is the most controversial thing I'm gonna say right now, but so sorry. Even because I thought about those things for years and years, you know, but even if the person has no resource and maybe end their life, because that's, you know, my clients ask me many questions with so many resistance. Are you sure what's right for me is right for others? And if they end their life, so, you know, I have all those things in my head. Even this somehow, and I know it's hard to hear, that was meant to happen for the greatest good. Because in some state of consciousness, we are one and we are all here to get to rise, to awaken, mm-hmm. right? So if one being and soul decided to end its life, it's at service somehow mm-hmm. to the people around them and to the global bigger field. So even in that sense, I deeply and deeply believe that we are all meant to embrace a truth, because doing so is also going to inspire the person that might have never had this opportunity, and so that's why they end their life, you know, because they don't find the sense, because they are so stuck into there are things that maybe me being there super wild with my drum, even if everybody in my family, whatever, say, like, I impose my desire, I you know, don't compromise for other people's well-being, cooking when I don't want to, you know, whatever. Well, then for this person, being me and walking this path, will might awaken something in them. Maybe I don't need to waste my life taking care of other people. Maybe there's something inside of me that has its space to express and to scream and to express all those feelings stuck there for years that makes them suffer so deeply.
Maybe it's planting a seed deep inside of them and one day.
Yeah, so that's my mission. And that didn't happen by itself, you know. There were initiations also on my path, which, you know, I still name myself a privileged white woman. So for me, that was easier to access, you know, healing and university where I study psychology and I could, you know, do all those trainings and things to help me heal. So today it's my mission to share this, and I make myself, you know, like paid. I'm not the soul that is here to completely, you know, release any attachment to material to help people in need. I'm not this. I'm, in essence, somebody, because I tried to do this for years, being a yoga teacher, you know, like asking for nothing. But today I'm like, no, I'm a woman empowerment leader. And for women to get empowered today, they need to feel that they deserve to thrive in abundance, the money, the legacy, you know, because from the 60s we couldn't have a bank account on our own, you know.
Crazy.
So we were, you know, conditioned to be somebody's servant for our survival, which was our husband with patriarchy that had the rights, da da da. So imagine, it's been only 60 years.
It's crazy. We are just in the beginning.
Exactly.
And I love what you say, because it's, I think it's really important for us that we allow ourselves to have money, to have this material.
Yeah, independence.
Because yes. I always ask myself or other people, maybe it triggers sometimes. And I also lost some friends because I believe in this. When there is so much abundance inside of you, why it's not on the outside? Because your inner world creates your outside, so your reality. So yeah, I think it's super important, because real femininity, we can express this when we, how can I say, when we have enough money, when there is every aspect.
Yeah, that's the masculine. You, if we call that polarities, it's like your inner masculine is holding, containing, supporting, having all that you need. It's your foundation, the, you know, Maslow pyramid. It's like you have your food, your shelter, da da da. So then, at the top of the pyramid, there is self-accomplishment. If you have nothing to eat, if you struggle to get a place to live, if you have no water, if all is dirty, like, your inner feminine is like, I don't feel good in my body, I don't... So then you have nothing to offer, you know, I think... Like this thing, I talk a lot about toxic spirituality, because it's something that really burned me, like, to places I'm not allowing myself, being like, oh, I should be happy no matter what, so I accept and so show release the material attachment and all of this. But I was really struggling, and so then I was dry inside, so I had nothing to offer, you know. And so because my therapy, I was paying like super low, then I was like going from one to the next to the next, and at the end I was like nothing to give, you know, just listening to get my money. And I'm like, no, This is, you know, a balance in between what do you need, and it's unique to every being. As we said, we all have a different mission as we are incarnated in this form, which makes us unique completely, even if we belong to something greater. But there is this unicity of you that has different things to experiment. And as I said, I'm today in women empowerment, so this is important for me to feel like I deserve to take care of myself, to buy me nice things, to feel good in my body, to then inspire women to dare to release the shame, the fear, the traumas that makes us super frozen in our hips, in our bodies, like walking small, being afraid in the world. And as you said, like something about inner, outer, it's like whatever you are experiencing inside then will manifest somehow outside. Example, and I really love this, it's fascinating me to bring science into spirituality, is that our nervous system, if we do feel shut down or scared, in resonance, because our nervous system attuned to all nervous system subconsciously, it is something that happens without even us being conscious of this, scan the people in the room and find the resonance. So if you are shut down and scared and small and not good, then that's where the predators comes. Because they feel that you have space, you are fragile, you don't really know how to say no, and you don't really know how to take fully care of yourself. So you're there like, I don't really have the money, so I'm still like, my parents are giving me some, so I can't say no, because if they don't give me the money, then how gonna, you know, this is so important to be empowered, to have your own money, to be independent. And that's why I'm so fierce today. And I can offer this world, this work, is that I own myself fully, to every extent. Financially, I don't need anybody, anytime. Super independent. Emotionally, I know how to take care of my inner part, as I said. That's this, you know, it's a concept, polarity, but it just helps to explain, you know? Like this inner masculine, which is also Shiva, the consciousness, the observer. This is the space that can take care of emotions, of parts. And the idea is not to stay out there. 4,000 years ago, it was fine for the yogi in the cave, you know? They wanted to leave the body and go to samadhi. It's fine. Today, we're still going to those classes, talking about samadhi and being waking up at 5 in the morning, doing 8 hours a day practice. Today, people want to be in the world, in relationship, have babies. This is not the spirituality they need. This is not their, like, 10-day silent meditation. They need to learn how they are bigger, but come back and take care of those parts. Mm-hmm. And to be fully with them. I love you and I want to take care of you. I want you to thrive. And that's the inner lover. I talk about this today. It's not the inner masculine. It's like your inner lover. How does it take care of yourself? Before you have your moon time, you know, is it like off, like buy everything in the fridge for it to be ready, so then you don't have to go out that day, you know? And so I have my inner lover loving me so much. He wants to offer me the best, you know? Like this is, most people like want to find somebody like this that provides and like gets and stuff. I'm like, no, I'm gonna provide that. I am my inner lover taking care of my inner woman that then want to enjoy the sun and the beach and the food and the rest and the movement, the sensuality, and receiving all the blessings of life, bowing to earth as the creation that is not separated by the creator. You know, that's for me, the non-dual path is like creator created and they are one. There is nowhere to go, there is nothing to be separated from, and Mother Earth is so abundant. So why will you thrive yourself to being hungry and having nothing? I don't get it. I do get it 4,000 years ago. If you wanted to leave the body, fine, I don't care. I want to be on this planet. This planet is amazing.
Beautiful.
So beautiful. So
I love what you said, because when we women, I see this, we want to step into our femininity and stuff. We focus on the feminine energy, but we need to focus on the masculine. We need to create a space to lean into it.
That is the key. That is the key right here. Mm-hmm. That is the real key for me as a woman. And for men, you know, it's like, I don't want to go into gender, but that's kind of like, we've been influenced by society, so that's not something to forget about. So we do have polarities that are like erased from the way we've been conditioned and we grew up, for sure, but there is also, we have bodies, you know? And so men do have testosterone, you know, every day. They don't have like us, like cycles that moves. And so then we are more like, you know, feminine in nature, you know? So for men, they need, as you know, conditioned by this society, to open their heart to their emotion, their vulnerability to their inner woman. And so that's their work. For women, yes, we have been frozen in many parts because we were not safe to let our inner woman free, but that's because we weren't safe, because we had trauma. So who is there to take care of this? The inner masculine. The part in you that is able to say no so strongly, and you're so independent, and you have everything, you take care of yourself, you don't need anybody. So then, you don't let anybody enter your field if you don't want to. Mm-hmm. And that's energetic. Mm-hmm. That's not like, oh, in this area in the world, like, of course, like, our inner man needs to take care of ourselves, put ourselves in safety, not like 3 a.m. and the street, like, oh, I'm safe because in my nervous system I feel safe. No, it takes care of myself, but still I feel safe. That, like, if I see somebody, you know, I don't have any place for it to come in. You know, I don't even care. Even if somebody talks to me, I'm not gonna argue. There's no place, no door half open. So that's my inner masculine, definitely. That creates this safety for me to dress like this, my skirt to dance like this, crazy. Because, like, I'm telling you, men, like, don't even dare to come to me. They're so scared, you know, they're intimidated, you know. So then the only man that is, you know, then this one is gonna come. I have no space.
The one who can handle you.
Yeah. That's an energy.
I liked this at the retreat, or at the festival, women festival, one women festival. You expressed that so good. Maybe you can do it again, like this, when we are in this energy of we are not sure and we don't have boundaries and we cannot say no because please love me.
Yeah.
And then you were like, the other women, the women who set boundaries, who know who she is and who speak her truth and stuff. That was super powerful.
I often propose this. We didn't really have that much time. We had only 1 hour of this workshop, which is actually a 3 hours workshop that I do oftentimes called White Woman Rage, where we actually experiment, you know, all those breath works and all those things that helps the prefrontal cortex kind of letting space for the body to come back to its aliveness And so, you know, like we have a lot of protectors that protects us from being humiliated. You know, those five core wounds: rejection, betrayal, humiliation, injustice, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So all those abandonment wounds. So all of those, we have protectors.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, we feel very frozen oftentimes. So you need to understand all those things, understand how to talk to the parts of you, being like, you're safe, I'm here. Even if nobody loves you, even if everybody rejects you, I'm gonna love you. I'm gonna take care of this inner child that has been humiliated, has been rejected and abandoned in a time where this little one wasn't independent. As an adult today, and as a woman, which is even a bigger work, because we all carry, you know, transgenerational trauma. It's been scientifically proven that we can carry those fears in our nervous system if we are unsafe to be ourselves. You know, I talked about this, the core one of, I needed to let go of my authenticity to belong. But that's when to belong, I needed to belong, to be safe as a children, as a woman before the 60s, you know. So we carry more of this in the world, so it's more important for women to do that work of like, okay, meeting those parts that are still protecting us for death, basically, in our nervous system. If I'm rejected, humiliated, abandoned as a child, as a woman before the 60s, then I will die. So then telling those pieces that are still there, often talk about the whole thing around the primal brain doesn't know about past, present, future. He just knows about like right here, right now, in your nervous system. You still have a frozen memory of being unsafe, and if you are yourself, you're gonna die. So this is real in our nervous system. And that's why people like see the world from the neocortex and are like, but everything is fine today. My partner loves me. I don't understand why I can be free. I know nothing will happen. I know that if I say no to that person, then he will be nice with me. Yes, but in my nervous system is like, danger, danger, death, death, death. So that demands a lot of work of knowing this part that is here and now safe, meeting this part and being like, okay, who are you? Where are you from? What are you scared about? No, I'm here with you. Yes, so I create my pillar of safety. I have money, I'm independent. Then my pillar of love. I love you no matter what. If people reject you, abandon you, humiliated you, then I won't criticize you, I won't humiliate you, because oftentimes to survive, we had to tell ourselves that was us, that wasn't good, or it wasn't our fault. You know, as children, when we were humiliated, then we created a protector part that was like, yes, so then you need to be perfect, because when you're like this, you're dumb. Don't be dumb. And then when people are like, oh, you're dumb, you're like, yes, I'm dumb. You know, that's this part of you talking like, yes, I'm bad, yes, I'm not good, yes, da 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 da. So you're, you know, like, your system is very scared to go in the world, because if somebody criticizes you, then you criticize you, then you're dumb, you're dead. You know, like, you let yourself in the corner being like, you see, I know I was dumb, I know nobody loves me, I know everybody will abandon me if I'm myself, I knew it. I knew it, and that's what's happening. Inner, outer.
Mm-hmm.
You still carry this inside, you're gonna manifest this outside until you understand that the more you're gonna love yourself, and that's a cliche. Nobody can love you once you don't love yourself. But that's very deep.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yes, if I don't love myself, then I will have people outside that will press my little buttons. It's called reenactment. Peter Levine taught this. He is a somatic experiencing trauma, amazing person. So he talked about this. Reenactment is that your wounds wants to be free. Your wounds are the frozen response in your nervous system. So this wants to release. It doesn't want to be there anymore. It's safe now.
Mm-hmm.
Wants to be released.
But how can we heal this?
Yeah, so that's like because we've been conditioned as human beings, not trusting our bodies, being up there, being like, I need to be strong, my emotions are illusion, or I'm strong, da-da-da-da-da-da. So when we want to cry, we don't. When we want to scream, we don't. When we want to punch a pillow, we don't. When we feel like, as women, when we orgasm sometimes, like, we feel vulnerable, but no. If I'm vulnerable, I'm gonna die. Remember your dad telling, or whatever, who in your childhood telling you that if you are crying, you are weak, you know, that all of this made people completely disconnected to the actual body releasing frozen stuff in the nervous system. So how do we get out of freeze is fight and flight. So either you fight or then you run away, but you couldn't, so that's what created the trauma. But now that you are safe, you can fight and you can run, but there is no more danger, so that's why your body feels like there is danger everywhere. So that's why you need to experience that today there is no more danger, and be that person for yourself. No more danger, even if we are humiliated, rejected, I'm safe within myself. So little by little, those places will relax. But you are the key to your healing. Your pillar of safety, of love and belonging, I belong to myself no matter what, and trusting that you're going to find your people.
Yes.
Being fully you, you have a place in the world where people will love you exactly the way you are, and where people will respect the fact that we are human, imperfect, and if you're willing to grow and work on yourself, like, what's the problem? I was always like, so sad whenever people like put a finger on me, being like, you're that, and not even letting myself the space to grow and learn and have compassion about the fact that, of course, I'm not perfect, you neither, so please give me a little bit of space. But because I'm, I don't know, people just want me out, you know, it's like it triggers them, so anyway. Yeah, so there's a lot that I said. But to close this whole thing, you said something about, yeah, like during my workshops, I teach women to find this power and to practice the no's.
Yeah,
and to receive a thank you for your no. So little by little, all of this here, today you're safe, today is not like before, so slowly and slowly, it releases.
But it's important what you say, because we need to experience this. We cannot just do it in our mind and just say you are good enough, and we need to experience
this. And actually there is a technique
you can
do in visualization, because when you visualize but with the five senses, as if you were there, this activates the primal cortex, which, you know, like trauma is all about, like I remember smell, or like this person with this beard, you know, like it's not full picture, it's just like some elements, you know, people tell when they have trauma, they just remember a sentence or a smell or whatever. So if you visualize yourself five senses, and actually practicing what you want to practice, like saying no, leaving, then you can access, you scan your body and you access the little parts that are scared. And then you question, hey, who are you? What are you afraid of? What will happen if we do this? What are you trying to protect me? So it's good to remember those three keys. I'm the observer, loving awareness of like, whatever you are, I'm gonna love you, support you. I am this loving, caring parent for all parts of me. Trying, you know, to be my authentic self. What are you scared about? Where do you come from? What are you trying to protect me? That's the protector. And underneath, there's the pain. There's the frozenness on the trauma. the day where you was in love, you were not loved because you say no, you were rejected, da, 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 da. So then you need to come back to that place, give so much love to that, be like, come back to me, I'm gonna love you. Nobody is gonna have power over you, because oftentimes we just walk around with our inner child like this, being like, do you love me? No. Just like, our inner child are alone in the world, it's terrible, and they're choosing our partners. They're choosing the caretakers. That's called imago. It's like, okay, I'm gonna find the partner that is exactly the one that created my wound in the first place, because I still believe this is their love I need for my survival. Then you meet, you know, toxic relationship, where you meet this person that is actually rejecting you exactly as your parents did, da-da-dee, da-da-da. Either you're able to do the work and you grow together and you heal, or it's gonna turn out to be bad. And so your work is to take care of your inner child and learn how to do this and give love to yourself. Love is the key, but Marla said this. All we need is love, and you're so right.
Sure. But when there is a woman, maybe single, and the next relationship she wanna a really nice, a healthy relationship, what can she do? What can we do?
Yes.
To be this, to attract what we want to attract.
That is it. Becoming your pillar of safety, of emotional. So love, pillar of love, I'm gonna love you no matter what, I'm gonna become my inner lover, I'm gonna offer you the best, I'm gonna tell you you're the most beautiful things. It's like everything you are inside that you're creating. So when you are gonna become your like inner lover, like the person you actually want in your life, not from a place of lack, because this is when all of those things happen, I need the other to feel sexy. I need the other to tell me I'm worthy. I need the other to validate who I am. I'm waiting for someone to make my days feel less boring. It's like, you're never gonna have this outside if you don't work on being that person for yourself, being this lover that you want for yourself. So that's the key. The key is to become your inner lover. And so then you can manifest it, but not from a place of lack and need, but from a place of completeness. And still, I desire a partner with whom we can build our life together, but not because my life isn't built yet. Not because I need somebody to save me. Otherwise, I'm gonna find my caretaker and it's gonna be a play of trauma bound. And it's gonna be struggle. It can happen, some healing and growth and maybe good ending, because we all are, you know, guided to heal, to grow. So nothing happens for a reason, but you can also help yourself suffer less by knowing all of those things. help yourself having more tools to actually, yeah, having less pain, you know, some people experiencing, you know, accident and very intense sicknesses. For me, this is, you know, life being, hey, wake up, you know. So more you are doing the work without life needed to shake you to do it, better it's gonna be. So let's do the work today.
Yes. Yeah. I would love to go a bit deeper into your own story. So let me tell you, tell us.
Yes, please.
About your story, about your first years on Mother Earth.
Yeah. So my story, how did I, you know, came to supporting women, empowerment, all of this is, and I often, you know, talk about my, that's why, like, women, men, and I'm helping women because it's easier for me. I've experienced it, so I can help women better. Even if, like, as a therapist, I help men and women, but I want to stop doing that. I really want to focus on helping women. But yeah, my father, you know, was very intense, must say. So the second you walk through the door, you know, like the atmosphere changed and we had to really be scanning the whole environment, being adaptive, you know, every move. So it wasn't about us, it was about adapting to the other, to be as perfect as possible, to have no problem otherwise, you know. Screaming and all kind of stuff happened at home, even when we were trying to be perfect. You know, it's just dysregulation of the nervous system and trauma. So we couldn't help, but we thought maybe, because if I didn't tell myself that I was the one creating the problems, then I will have felt completely unempowered. So that's why the children tell themselves, I was the bad one, da da da, and I need to be perfect, to be loved. You know, you create all those things. So I created this, that love was conditional, that I needed to be perfect, to have, you know, to be valuable, to be loved. And my dad was a musician, and I remember one day I was so touched because I was a very sensitive soul. I don't know, like seven, eight, and I was listening to that song with beautiful lyrics, but it was like a rap, you know, like rapping. Mm-hmm. And my dad was like, "It's so bullshit," you know, like he was judging everything. And so, and he told, like, every time I was crying, it was like, "Oh, you hypersensitive." I was playing music at the piano, and sometimes I was doing wrong notes, and it was like screaming. So, you know, I created this whole thing about, like, my sensitivity is too much, I'm too much, or I'm not good enough. Exactly, that's, you know, the one. So yeah, my dad created all of these things, and my mom, you know, had to adapt. So she taught me that, you know, you need to sacrifice yourself, to compromise, to make everything good. So anyway, so I was very shut down, very, you know, like, well, that's good because it helped me really being empath. Like, I'm, you know, like, you become very good at scanning people, knowing who are what the, you know. Yes. So that was my childhood, and then I had experienced sexual trauma, so that didn't help. So then, you know, drugs, eating disorder, no going to high school, I quit school, I was like out of every high school, but you know, there were like something cool about it, which didn't help me either, you know, being the bad, severed, like, drugs and alcohol made me cool, so that's how I'm loved. But my vulnerability and my little parts of sensitivity was like pushed very far. I can't be loved if I am vulnerable, if I am not perfect. And so that's why I founded yoga and meditation, which helped me a lot, soothed my nervous system for all of this trauma, but didn't help that little layer of, if I'm not perfect, I'm not going to be loved. Yes, because if you're a yoga teacher, if you meditate, you know, you're not supposed to be crying about, I don't know what happened, feeling disempowered. I was supposed to have all the tools. And I did study psychology, you know, as a normal path of healing. But all of this, you know, didn't really get to this core wound of, I'm not loved if I'm not perfect. So then I founded Tantra, and this was like bridging those two, because I was so confused. There was spirituality on one side, there was psychology on another side of like, we're helping people once, but this is illusion and we're not that. So I was so confused, you know, for years. And then yeah. You've experienced this also?
No, I don't know how to say in English. Maybe I'm hungry or I don't know. Do you heard it?
Oh, yes, look, dragon fruit. So, yeah, like Tantra helped me bridge the two of like, I can be that space that is love and meet all those parts of me, experience, like, let my emotions run through me but not take over me. So that's balance of like repression and being overwhelmed by, and finding this balance of Shiva Shakti, of masculine and feminine and everything. And so meeting those inner child, meeting the sensibility, but without it taking over, but not being repressed. And loving all parts of me and becoming this pillar of love and belonging, no matter what people think or say, because for a long time, because you see how I am, I'm very intellectual, like I like to understand everything. And so when I was in struggle at some point with my toxic relationships, you know, not understanding very much this thing about my, you know, it's lots of layers. So I know a lot of things, but then in your life, you meet layers and layers and layers and layers and many experiences that make you see how deep those wounds are, but also getting more and more layers out and healing and more healing. So anyway, I was in this confusion with that guy. I didn't understand anything, and people were telling me, you're too much in your mind, come back to your body. I was like, yeah, but I need to understand. And today I'm like, so when were they, when they said that, then I was like, yeah, I'm too much in my mind, spirituality, I should be in the present moment. It created even more struggle inside of myself. Now I love my mind. I love the fact that I can explain everything because I can help people even more. And it is amazing to understand what's going on. And so then you can come back to the body, give the love, move it, sound it, and you can merge everything into oneness. And for me, this is the non-dual. There is no mind, there's no anything. It's all one coming together. And so, yeah, I love my mind, I love my inner child, I love my emotions, I love all of this because I know how to meet it. Yeah. I know how to take care of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. Would you take us in your reality back then when you were this old version of you, and then maybe was there a moment of changing? Was there something happening or something that changed and that lead you into who you really are and this woman that you created today?
Yeah, so basically, you know, like the household where there was like fear, and every time I was doing something, like even breaking glass, you know, it was like, the end of the world. So anyway, and yeah, then still, like, I think I'm an artist at heart, you know. So I was doing piano and I was doing theater, and but I was very scared, and my dad was there and I wanted to be loved and perfect and it to be beautiful. It was not for me, like somehow they were like, me wanted to do it, but not that way, you know. And so it took a form to be loved. And then, you know, I did my journey of going to university, psychology, meeting that partner, family, in their family, it was really loving, and he was like smoking weed, eating Nutella. So, you know, I had eating disorder after my sexual assault, because, you know, you don't know how to take care of those intense feelings inside of yourself. So you numb them out with alcohol, like I did. I did numb myself out with all of those things. But he...
How old were you then?
So that was 16. So yeah, my dad and all of this conservatory, and then going to middle school. And at the end of middle school, I got sexual assault. And so then, you know, high school was drugs. And but then finding this partner that, you know, didn't care at all. And so, yeah, I could feel loved for who I was, even with my eating disorder, even with everything. And his family was so loving. So it really did soothe my nervous system, so I could get my bachelor's degree at the end. Finally, everybody was surprised, you know. It's like, You know, I was 2 years off of school.
He was this badass.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Drinking beer at 8 in the morning and going to I don't know the name in English because I don't go to those places in English. But yeah, like those rave parties. I took many drugs. I took everything basically. Okay. I could find. I even took some heroin, but I never did this. I realized that I understand why people that suffer and have many, many traumas and suffering do take heroin, because it numbs everything. You don't feel anything, you're just on a cloud, everything is fine. So then when heroin passes, then you suffer again, because they have no tools to soothe your nervous system or do that healing. So, well, that was a good experience for me to understand suffering and all of this, you know, and know why people take drugs and all of this. So anyway, I went through this years of high school, and then I went to university in psychology. I still had some eating disorder, but it was still better trying to love myself a little more. Then I did yoga, and I guess with the yoga, I also did learn mantras, and I was playing piano, you know, so I did harmonium and I started to learn those mantras. And doing devotional music and art, it was not about me anymore, trying to be loved or perform something good. It was for something bigger. So I completely opened my voice and I, you know, because I was not scared of not being loved anymore. I was just trying to open people to this practice and to be as, you know, egoless possible at that point when I was doing yoga, you know, I was like really trying to completely surrender the need to be loved, the need to, you know. And so then I started, you know, playing the drum, and I started to organize events for people to free themselves. And not for me anymore, I was performing, but to inspire. And so then I was like doing weird, bad songs, and I was doing workshops where people, like, I was like, do the scary, like the weirdest sound and the weirdest face and then the weird sound and body doing this, all of this and whatever. Then I, discovered so many things my voice could do, and now I sing even better. But it doesn't matter, right? And this is the crazy thing about it, not caring, offering it to something bigger than yourself, putting your ego aside. Mm-hmm. But then I did the healing with the inner child and stuff, so now I'm more integrated. I don't need to not care about all of this to be completely free. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this really helped me to free myself, like music and bhajans. And
do you know the food song?
Yes.
Amazing, I love this.
I think it's going in Bali, you know? It's been turned in.
It's a movie?
Yeah, but it's been turned in, filmed in Bali.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I'm waiting. Yes. So what's about it?
What you said remembered me about this movie, because there is this, you need to see this movie, one of my favorite ones, because it shows so beautiful this, how do you say in English, this experience of a soul, and he is a musician. Mm. This is why I felt this connection.
I was like eat, pray, love. I thought we were talking about this, but yes, soul is like this musician. Yes. It's like a cartoon kind of movie.
Yes.
I've seen it. Yeah. It's, but I don't really remember.
And you need
the moral of the story. Yes.
It's like this. What can happen when a soul or a human being finds his purpose and his thing, and how it changes us, how it's
That's one thing we can add for the woman that wants to find the partner, or, you know, of their life, is to find their purpose and their drive. Because otherwise you will always feel bored, or you will always like roam around your life trying to, you know, and so what helps you is like, okay, what have you been going through? What helped you? So this is, you know, your purpose and your mission, if you want to help people. But yeah, it's like, it's so important to find it. Otherwise, you will always feel incomplete.
Yeah. And also that you have a reason why you wake up, and you have a vision of yourself and what, why you are here, and what do you want to create to bring into this world.
Yes. That's,
wow, that gives me so much energy. So
exactly.
Much.
More than no desire. Being present in the moment. You know, it's like, yes, you can have both. Mm. You can and be fully in the present moment. That's the feminine, you know. And fully visioning it, having purpose, and you know where you're going. And even if you don't arrive there, that is still the journey, you know, that makes sense in your life. And that, yeah, just, I love Leila Martins. That's the one that inspired me the most, like, through my sexual healing, and through my training and through my healing of spiritual toxicity, also, like, all those things. But she said, even getting enlightened, it was first a desire of finding more peace, a desire to, you know. So it's like this thing about no desire makes no sense. I think, like, yes, you need to find a balance of, like, I desire something, but I'm not attached. If it's not gonna happen, it's fine. I'm still gonna find all the different ways to do what I want to do, to bring something that is valuable for me in this world, not just roam around and, you know, because, yeah, I see a lot of men like this today because of this spirituality, like, oh, no money, I'm living just out of food. And I'm like, yeah, but what is your purpose? Like,
I
what do you bring to this world? Like,
than you. I heard this, I am more spiritual than you, Michelle. You need this money and this...
Exactly, to feel good.
I'm over it.
Of course.
I'm just a free spirit. But
exactly. But what do you do in the world? You're just running here around. You don't serve anything. I'm going to freaking help thousands of women. I'm going to, like, change the world. Like this is, you know, power. This is bullshit. You know, this is just laziness. I can do that. I'm so sorry, but, like, really, it demands so much more. Focus, resistance, you know, like, to break through so many patterns and conditioning, you know, for the money to charge what you deserve and what you need to thrive. You need to break so many, like, money's bad, you know, sex is bad, all those religion conditioning. So I think the spirituality kind of, like, entangled even more those things. And so you rising into your power, asking more money, you will have to do this healing.
Yeah.
So it's so much more work and spiritual work than just smoking weed all day, not paying any rent, staying in a tent on the beach.
Yeah.
Where is the spiritual work?
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're in the present moment. I can do this. It's not going to ask me anything,
mm-hmm.
you know? It's like, this is even deeper work, and it demands, you know, at some point I was at the threshold of my, you know, because you can feel how much work it's going to take you to get to where you want to be. So there is your mind being like, I just want to be at the beach enjoying my life, please, you know, and I'm a Pisces sun sign, and, you know, like, connection to the universe and transcendence. I love smoking weed and playing my harmonium and being like, oh, you know, I'm like, oh, merging with all, and it is fantastically blissful. Of course, transcendence is bliss, but this is the first stage of enlightenment. And you know what? People don't tell about this, but 4,000 years ago, we needed to see that there was something bigger than the body. We didn't know about transcendence, so those gurus needed to show that it was possible for people to experience, to find this place beyond the body, the emotion, the mind, and the little self. But now, the earth is rising in vibration, and so we need to, so that's called evolution. we need to do this process of involution, embodiment of divine, divinity embodied. We're becoming embodied divinity. We know that we are more than this. So then we can come back, heal all that is not us, that is bringing us away from our purpose and what we're here to do, to become the gurus, the leaders, the one that shows the light at the end of the tunnel. Have to go back and do this work to then lead others. So the gurus 5,000 years ago needed to help people find this place of transcendence. Today,
different.
We need to bring people back into their bodies, heal the traumas. And so it really does feel like this is the shift happening right now. A lot of more people talk about this, like toxic spirituality, dissociation, spiritual bypass. We're starting to bring those knowledge back, like, or to understand or to make this shift. And so that's why, like, the priestess and the woman's spirituality work comes back, you know, being with your body, your sexuality, freeing yourself, allowing yourself pleasure and desires and all of this. So I'm like, thank you for this masculine spirituality or whatever it is that doesn't help with releasing all those conditioning with societal bullshit. So now we need to go a step forward and to come back to those teaching.
I heard this and for me this was really interesting and really deep, because I heard this new age spirituality that you talk about was created from the CIA. You know the CIA?
Oh!
And it makes so much sense because when it...
Yeah!
Mm-hmm. When there are people, spiritual people, and they are just manifesting, sitting on their bed or something, and just having visions and just, oh, it's all so nice, and oh, I don't have to do something because I'm so spiritual.
Exactly.
Then that's the perfect, you know, that's...
To do all their shit in the world, and to make a woman's right even worse than all of this in some countries. Yes, yeah, of course. So that's why, you know, I was on that threshold, I was studying, I was in Megatitlan, and I met that guy and had a little hut with everything in it on this thing, and he was like, you know, I was like, I could live there and I could just lead some bhajans and make some money just like this, and this is really comfort, the easy zone for me, and I could live like this. And I was still taking my flight back because my sister decided to get married, which is really beautiful, but thanks to her, I was talking in this flight with this guy that was like a businessman and stuff, and I was like, I don't know what to do, like I have this calling and mission, but also like my soul just wants to merge with all and just to play music, and is it what I need to do, and you know, all this confusion all the time, should I be good here and now, or it really doesn't feel right, and so I want to move and make more money to then have a better place to stay, because really, you know, I was judging myself a lot, creates a lot of
that's an important season of your
yes, but today we're talking about this because you don't have to be in there,
like, but in this moment it's
it was really important. But yeah, I want to do this podcast to tell people, like, all of this judgment, all of this confusion, all of these things, it's just bringing you further away from your truth, which is, do you feel good? Do you feel not good in your body? Does it open? Does it close? You know? And at some places, I was super close, but because you need to be good in every moment and find the gratitude and the joy, I was not in the right place with not the right people, not doing what I'm supposed to do. So this is what I said for a woman to say no, to leave, it's to come back to your own truth. And the priestess path or the woman's path is not like a guru, which is always man, or a priest, you know, sitting up there and saying, and he's telling you the truth of what you should do. No, it is a path of coming home, and you are your own guru, and you have your own
important
truth inside. And you know, like I'm doing this a session which is called the spiritual power. It's a whole session where you are visualizing yourself as a child and being surrounded with empowering priestess and woman leader that teach you about emotions and your bodies and woman and God is a woman, the goddess path, you know, everything is sacred and divine and there is God in every single creation. This is the amazement of being in awe with the creation, which is the body, which is the senses, the food. All of this is the goddess. You know, the goddess path, and how then they're bringing you to whenever you ask the question, what is it? You have the answer. Listen, is it good? Not good. You only know. Mm-hmm. And that for me was like the session that was the most liberating from all those. I need, even, you know, astrology, medium, tarot cards, you know, like trying to have somebody tell you, please tell me, I'm so confused. You know, everybody was telling me, you're so intuitive, being like a Pisces and moon in Scorpio. You know, I'm a very spiritual person and I'm very empathetic and stuff. And people are like, you're so intuitive. I was like, I'm always confused. I never know what I want. It's so hard for me to take decisions. Why? Because I was confused with all those things and toxic spirituality taking space inside of me, not embodied. So yes, you were too much in your mind, but that's not the right way to say it. Mm-hmm. It's like, I need to listen to the parts of me in my mind that are talking or confused and understand what are they coming from. Are they protectors? What are you protecting? Da, 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 da. Put myself away from them and not dissociating from them to understand who they are, to then get access to the raw body that is the guru, that is your truth, that is your inner compass that will tell you if you feel good in that moment or not. And to not go up, yes, but it's gonna be mean, I'm gonna hurt this person,
How can we learn to trust and also following?
Yeah.
In a voice.
Yeah, that is the taking care of the parts. Because if you're trying to, you know, like for example, my body is saying no right now, so I should just leave. But you're going to be afraid, so you have the frozen response of the inner child, like if you leave, you're going to die. So you need to learn to understand all of this. That's why we're talking about all the things that can bring us further from this inner compass, inner truth. It's to take care of all of this, to understand all of this, understand what is bringing you away of this spiritual, toxic spirituality and your inner child and your protectors and your traumas and all of this. And little by little, then, because you feel it anyway. You feel it, and the truth is there. But it's the action following your truth that is hard. Mm. The fear of hurting, the shoals.
How can we do it?
Just do it.
Yeah,
but you're taking care of those parts, giving love, being your pillar of safety, love and belonging, and all those things, you know. So that's how you do it. It's like, whenever I feel not good now, but I know that people will look at me like this if I'm leaving, you know, it's like, well, if those people are going to look at it like this, if you're leaving, there are not the people for you to empower you to be good, to just want to be, you know, take care of yourself and sleep. And, you know, the people around you should be, because you're worth it. So that's also big work, to feel worthy. You know, the fear of like, okay, if I feel worthy, then I'm going to be narcissistic and no good things, and then I'm going to be alone. An inner child again, conditional love again, won't same thing all the time. Anyway, so you feel worthy, you're legitimate, to have people around you that wants your best, that want you to listen to yourself, that are taking care of themselves, that are doing the work. You can still, you know, communicate like, yeah, when you do this, it hurts me. So how can we find a nice balance? Like, you're not just living like this, that you can express hey, listen, I'm tired, I'm gonna go to bed. And that's fine, you know, we can discuss, we can come from a place of, you know, the heart with the other, having empathy for the fact that maybe it's hard for them that we separate each other because we don't feel this is right for us, but still doing it.
Yeah.
You know, not waiting for 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah.
To do it. But all those years were necessary to do the work, to heal your inner child, to become this pillar. That's not easy work. You know, it's not in a second I'm telling you this and then you're going to succeed. It's just helping, understanding the steps and understanding, that's the main key that can be the fastest, I feel. Is that every time there's something making you afraid to live your truth, just give it love.
Mm-hmm.
I will love you no matter what.
Let it be there, give them space.
Exactly. Yeah, because if you reject it, then it means you don't love it.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, because if you're like, you shouldn't be there, we shouldn't say no without justification, why are you afraid? You should be afraid, you should be strong, you shouldn't, this guilt of like, I'm betraying myself, I've done so much work on myself, but I'm still afraid, I still lied. You know, like we can be very critical and judgmental to our little parts, vulnerable and scared part of us. So that's the place. To not be it, I'm scared, I'm giving myself all the excuses that it's okay to be scared and I'm gonna always lie and be okay about lying, that's not what I'm saying. It's finding the place which is outside of it, which is the inner caring parents that are seeing it as a little piece that is afraid and reassuring it. And sometimes it takes first the encounter, second the proving that I'm here for you, because I can say, yes, I'm gonna be here for you. If you judge, I'm not gonna judge you, and then you judge and you're freak out.
Yeah.
So it's time, you know, it's time to feel ready. And so oftentimes women that have been so much doing so much work, they have an inner critic very much because they should succeed now, da da da. So oftentimes I'm like, full compassion about where we are at today. If we are who we are today, it makes sense.
Yeah,
there is still healing and it's fine. And I love saying that today, that you are worthy even if you still have many things to heal, even when you have many protectors doing things that are not what you will want, because it's not about like the person you want to be. Like sometimes you lie because you're afraid of saying no, sometimes you are doing things that, you know, and still loving this version of you,
mm-hmm.
still having compassion for the fact that it's hard.
Yeah.
It is freaking hard. It is real. This pain in our nervous system, this fear of death is real. So it's like, I will love you and you're worthy to be loved and respected, even
yeah.
being vulnerable, scared, not perfect. And that is from the end of the journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would love to go back to your story.
Yes! I always want to share for people and it's like talking about me, but yes.
I think it's important because you are, of course, you are also on your journey, but I think we all can learn from your journey and from your experience and from just all that you are.
Yes.
So was there this a turning point in your life or what happened?
yes. Yeah, so as I was saying, it felt like the unconditionally loving family and partner was a big deal,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be fully loved for who I was. That was a big turning point because until then I was just, you know, in trying to be loved and perfect and scared of my dad, still doing music and things, like to please and to be loved, and being scared and freaking out, and then the sexual assault, it was even worse, taking drugs. So, you know, that was the dark night of the soul, yeah. Until I could find him and his family. And then it started to become better. And I remember this moment that is like really, for me, you know, one person can say something that is like so innocent for them, but can change a life. I remember I was in middle school and I felt like nobody loved me. You know, I was never good enough, and I was trying to be this strong. So the teachers didn't like me and didn't really support me because I was just trying to be loved by my belongers. You know, like when you're children, you're trying to be loved by your parents, then you become a teenager, you're trying to be loved by, you know, your belonging. I don't know how to say this in English, but anyway. And so this teacher, actually, I think I made a mess, and so she was like, "You gotta clean this." So I was like cleaning this, but so fast because I wanted to go home to my friends. And she was like, "Wow, you were so fast cleaning this." I felt something inside of me. I'm telling you, first time somebody said I was doing something good.
Wow.
And this, like, I remember this moment. Wow. Just because she said I was cleaning right, this thing that she was like screaming at me about. So imagine this inner child that was always, you know, was told not being good enough is to be more, to be loved. And once somebody says, this is actually good. And then my partner loving me and his family being compassionate and loving me as I was. So all those things really planted a seed. And even I remember, so when I was like, you know, not going to high school and all of this, but there was one, so I still came to this government thing because I wanted to go back to school. At some point I was like, oh my God, if I don't go back now, I will never be able to do nothing with my life, you know. And some friends that I have at this time are dead now, you know. It's like we were really, you know, going to rave, taking drugs. I've seen things, you know, like people having babies and taking heroin. So I was in those environments, you know. And still, there was something inside of me that knew I wasn't part of it. I didn't belong to this, you know? It was just my suffering, and I didn't have anybody yet. I was crazy because my sister is a therapist, and she tried to get me treatment. But, she was young also, so she just, I came back home, and they put like all my, all the times I didn't go to school on the door. What are you doing? Big in red, you know. So my sister was trying to help, but still showing me that I was not good enough, that I was doing bullshit, wrong all the time, pointing behaviors. Nobody were like, fuck, she went through sexual assault, makes sense. Because I was, I went to the course, how do you call, to government, like to tell that I was like assaulted.
Oh,
so there were like tribunal, all those
police.
Yeah, the police and all of this. We did all the things, and I even got like 3,000 euros, I remember, from that, that thing that happened. Mm-hmm. And I remember my sister being like, well, this is bad money, so you shouldn't keep it. And so I spent it all on drugs. So, you know, people were trying to help, but like, not the way that I was succeeded. But anyway, she was trying to help me get help. But the first person I succeeded to see as a therapist, this guy was hanging out with us at night. I didn't know who will be the therapist. So that was kind of like a government place where you get treatment. And so I was like, this guy was drinking with us that Saturday. Not good. So then I was trying another person, and this other person was like this beautiful woman. So she was like, bim, the mirror of like, I'm not good enough. So after this, I did like a big like bulimia, you know, I was doing bulimia, like throwing away I like disgust. So I had a lot of disgust, you know, like when you do go through sexual assault, then you hold in your nervous system a lot of disgust. Of course, it was very disgusting. And shame. Yes. So basically it became this like throwing up, like this is disgusting, and I was very ashamed about it, my eating disorder, you know. So I didn't succeed to get help, and then I went to a hypnotherapist, and at some point she disappeared. So I was just alone with this. My family didn't understand. Even my sister was like blaming on the fact that I was like doing bad things, and you know, so anyway, nobody was really there to support, but still there was this thing that pushed me to go back to school. And one woman said, because she knew me from middle school before I had my sexual assault, and she knew I was a good student, so she was like, no, we should take her back. And that distrust, as I was telling, like the first person just telling me, you're doing good things, and my partner and family supporting who I was, receiving that support, this teacher believing in myself.
Oh, an angel.
Yeah, then I started working, and that's why I, in 1 year, because for 3 years, you know, in France you have 3 years of high school, mm-hmm. and so then the last year you go bachelor degree.
Okay.
For 2 years, didn't go to school, had the worst grades ever, you know. This year you had two exams to pass, and I had like the worst grade. So I had the worst grade, and in this, to get the bachelor, you need, it's like a average, but you need to have at least a certain, you know, to then get,
yes.
Yeah. So I was very far from everybody, but still, she believed in me. I was in this family. So then I worked and I got my bachelor degree.
Wow.
So this love and support really helped the first phase of my healing.
How was this moment for you when you wow, I
yes.
It. I
yes,
it.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, it was incredible because actually I knew that I was, you know, smart. I always succeeded to have good grades before of that and stuff. So I knew I could do it, but it, like, you know, there was like this two things of like, I can, but in the same time, I don't believe in myself, I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough, da da da. So I was very perfectionist, so that's why I really succeeded well, because I was like really, really getting into that perfectionist state. So I was still healing, but still in my patterns. So yeah, that was really beautiful, and then I chose psychology. So then from that point, I studied a lot of things in university that helped me.
When was this? Which year?
Yeah, that was like, so my asshole was like end of middle school. Then I went through this hell in high school, still got my bachelor degree, and then I went to university right after.
Okay, yes. Yeah. And how old were you?
I think I was, 14, 17 years old, 18 years old,
okay.
When you go out of high school, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you go to university, maybe 19, 18, 19 years old. That's when things kind of like soothed a bit more. And then, yeah, I met people that were playing music, doing yoga, and that's how I, you know, free myself. The music, starting to find yoga, so my nervous system, and this is really when all the bulimia stopped, and then I started.
And how it stopped?
Well, I guess, you know, when, because of the trauma, that's the bulimia actually, or like addiction, it's kind of like the parts of you that kind of soothe the intensity in the trauma. So whenever I find yoga, meditation, even if it brought other problems, it still is a good practice. So I'm not saying things need to be thrown away, but things need to be known for what service it can give you. So meditation can help you find some distance. Yoga can help you soothe your nervous system. So that's really good. So that helped me a lot. you know, to meet those intensity in my body, to move it, you know, opening up the hips. We know now that trauma is not in the story, but it's in the body, stored as frozen response that can create, you know, I had other issues down the line of like bowel, you know, irritable bowel syndrome. That is also a sign that you still carry trauma in your, you know, like second brain, emotions and things that are still like very, you know, inflamed. And the hips also carry a lot, like the psoas, you know, there's like, because when you froze, you can't run or fly away, so it's very tense. But to heal, as we said, we need to relax those things, telling you're safe now, so you can release. So all those hips opening are very good, all the breathing and pranayama, it's good for this, slowly, slowly. Even if some people can use it to dissociate and actually not really be in the body, if you only do meditation. When you do yoga, it's actually good. I did my thesis for the end of my master's degree in psychology with this like trauma-informed yoga for eating disorder. So that was, you know, like at the end, my story is always at service to your people, so I did that because it's really good, you know, for releasing a bit of this intensity. Doesn't mean that it needs more more than just doing the yoga, you know, it needs to be in a space where actually release can happen. Because yeah, when everybody's so calm, you also, that's why today I feel like Tantra is more like, but there is a lot of bad shadow in it too. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you need to be trauma-informed spaces. Mm-hmm. Somatic healing, so you are with the body, but you can also express voice, sound, movement. Ah, you know, helping it all release, because we all carry also a lot of tension in our throat, in our voice. I couldn't say, otherwise I was finished. And so we are very stuck in our throat. So sound, singing. Very good. Exactly. Yes, yes, yes. So you see, all I'm doing is like, not only because it is like neo-agey Kuan, we're there playing a woman and like, you know, being wild and sounding just because it's cool. No, it has a really deep understanding of how can we heal and heal and for what and how. And how the sound is very good for healing, how movement, how release, how practicing, how to know, how to finally tell your body that you can and you're safe now today to do so. So yeah, all of this I learned thanks to Tantra later on. So we were when I found yoga. So that was, you know, university, I found it more like music, kind of yoga. And then between my license degree and my master's degree, I went to the US because I really wanted to speak English and learn English. That's how, you know, for my thesis, you need to read a lot of English paper and it's very complicated English. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go somewhere. And first I was like, oh, I'm going to go to Jamaica or to Australia, because I was already a hippie doing yoga, you know, and so. But at the end, it was more expensive to go to those places than doing au pair in America. So I went to the US as an au pair and I was incredible. There I trained as a yoga teacher and I practiced more things and I discovered more stuff. But still, it was when I came back and finished all of this and COVID in 2020 that I actually spending time healing from really sexual trauma. Until then, I still have a lot of shame, you know, sex is bad, you know, spirituality didn't really help, you know, with like, oh, I should not have desire, like this primal, oh, this is not where I should be calm, and you know? Mm-hmm. So it's still very deeply ingrained in that, actually. I remember I wanted to do a yoga teacher training 6 months in India with Sadhguru, waking up at 5 in the morning, practicing 8 hours a day. I was still in that really deep, because it really did help, you know, in many ways. I was really believing in that. But I was still disconnected from my woman and from my body. And COVID, when everything stopped, I was like, and I was alone in my little student apartment, and my partner at the time was at the other side of the globe, stuck in America, in the US, because I met a US guy, an American, so he was there. And we couldn't see for 9 months. So that was really a time for me to be with myself. And yeah, often, my sexuality ended up in tears. You know, I thought it was all me. Actually, I learned that it was not very good at it, but I didn't know. You know, I thought it was all me. That's the thing also I want to say for women that have been through sexual trauma, is that if they don't like their sexuality, they always think it's them. Oh, it's because I have trauma, I can't open my pussy, I can't have pleasure, I'm numb, and all of this. No, it's because maybe your partner is not slow enough. Maybe your partner is not listening to you enough, creating enough safety for you to release this trauma. Because I deeply believe that we can heal sexual trauma together as a couple. Doesn't mean that it's important for you to do this work on your own, discover your body, love your body, release the shame, cry and things. You don't really want to cry all the time, even if it's for the good things with your partner. Mm-hmm. So there is both. But your partner also needs to understand and to, you know, I remember my partner once, I succeeded to have the strength to say no to something or to say, I will prefer this. His ego was poked and he reacted bad. So I'm like, also please others, support us, you know, but compassion, they're also wounded and everybody's on their journey. But anyway, just for saying that it's not always your fault.
Yeah.
And that you can ask your partner to be understanding, because you're worthy as you are, even if you have sexual trauma, to be listened to have the pace that you need for your body to feel safe and open. So anyway, I didn't know how to say what I wanted, nothing. But this month I was alone, and actually he was supposed to come to visit me for my birthday. He was supposed to be the gift for my birthday, 12th of March 2020. But COVID hit and it was stuck, so he offered me, oh my gosh, yes. I don't know if you heard about this, that's a platform online where there was like a researcher that was like, well, we only research about the pain in sexuality in women. Vaginosis, dyspareunia and all that kind of stuff. Anorgasmia, but never what a woman like to have pleasure and what helped orgasm and what, you know? Yeah. So they started to study this and they created this platform, oh my gosh, yes. And so in that, they teach, you know, they take the average of what all the women have shared about what they like, and they're like, oh, we came out with different type of techniques, like edging, like blended pleasure, like all kind of stuff to help you find your own pleasure, to discover. There is even pictures of yonis that you can move, that shows you, and you can actually give that to your partner. Be like, oh my god, I don't know how to do this. So I did practice on my own, and I did discover my body. And at first, I felt a lot of shame, a lot of shame. Why am I even doing that? You know, do I even like
how
that?
How did you handle this?
Well, that was like listening to all this, like, so Leila Martins, with who I trained myself, like all those women that bring the feminine spirituality. So I listened to also Usha Anandi, who had a warm science immersion course that she was talking about this difference between masculine spirituality and feminine spirituality, of like listening to the body and the cycles, and that, you know, lots of leaders were men. Even in India, the woman was at home taking care of children. So it's yoga is very much for men. Mm-hmm. Yes. So there is a spirituality that has been burned as the witches and patriarchy arrived and all those things. And so those women brings it back. So I was listening to all of this during this month. I found all of this as I released the perfectionist needed to do, as I allowed myself pleasure, bath, slow time, you know, lots of resistance of, oh my God, like, what am I, you know, finding this balance of like completely being lethargic and allowing myself to do nothing all the time and creating from a place of alignment, listening to my body, sleeping when I need it. It was like a learning. Yeah. So those women helped me being like, okay, actually, my pleasure is sacred. I'm healing. This shame is like my trauma. And so I started to being like, okay, making love to my body is actually, yeah, making love and giving pleasure, and he gives me pleasure back. So that was kind of like how I succeeded to release the shame, being like, no, it's actually love. Mm-hmm. Giving love and taking care of it, and then he gives back this beautiful, you know, love to me. And then, yeah, listening more to Leila Martin is amazing because she's so known now that she has a lot of free stuff. So I did a lot of her stuff for free, and she has Yoni Egg stuff. So I discovered this Yoni Egg. I did my first workshop with a woman, and she taught us about like this Taoism, like breathing and actually understanding how the Kundalini awakening, you know, like bridging my tantra that I knew, my yoga that I knew with the tantra, and really understanding, oh my God, actually my sexual energy is my life force. This is Kundalini Shakti energy. And then it can rise through the spine. And this is what is enlightenment. So then I was like completely breaking this, like sexuality is bad. It is only desire and shadow. But actually it is the force that is leading us to enlightenment. But it can just stay stuck here. It needs to move up with some techniques of Tantra, Taoism, and all of this. And, you know, talking about sexuality in that and how to use it for your well-being, for your health, for, you can move this sexual energy. Why also intercourse with a partner and actually focus to rise this energy to organs that needs healing and making this. So it's very technical, Taoism. It's very like breathing a certain way, like da-da-da-da-da-da, to heal certain parts and all of this. So I slowly release the shame through all those knowledge of like how your sexual energy is life force. This is healing, you know, like the clitoris is only there for your pleasure, and the hormones, yes, and the oxytocin and the dopamine you get is really good for you. But once again, this is a balance. So yeah, also there's a book of Dr. Shakti Marimalan, which helped me a lot, like understanding, you know, like how to move the energy and how to breathe and how to sound to expand the pleasure. And oh my gosh, yes, with the blended pleasure and all kind of different women I found along my path to kind of like bring pleasure back in my body. Like I had my first clitoral orgasm, but it was like so tiny. I was like, oh, that was an orgasm. Actually, I remember that I had before, but because, you know, they talk about this mind-blowing experience, I was like, well, I never had orgasm, you know? And then when I felt this first, I was like, oh, maybe there is more to it, you know? So that's...
When was this? On the timeline?
Yeah. So that was in between... No, that was in my master degree. Okay. COVID 2020, so I came back from the US and I left my partner there. And so we were stuck in France and he was there. So that was after the whole US trip and everything. Discovering, yeah, Tantra through this COVID time, beautiful, like life-changing for me to have this time and drop into more feminine, slow, this feminine mysteries and bringing back those ancient practices, Tao, Tantra, and slowly I had my, you know, full body orgasm, and actually that was like,
how was it?
Yeah, it was intense. It was like, okay, that is how an orgasm should feel like. This is a mind-blowing experience. Now I know everything about it. It's like, yes, there is like pleasure, which is one aspect, but if you want like the orgasm, you need expansion and the mind shift. So really like allowing yourself to sound, move, breathe, you know? And of course, releasing the stuck energy. So I did a lot of like de-armoring. It's like a, you massage the inner, the vagina as you will massage a pain on, you know, shoulders or whatever. You release stuck tensions. Yes. Through massaging. So maybe for some women, they have more intense, maybe a soul that makes them even like scared of bringing the hand close to or whatever. But you can visualize light, massaging. But anyway, so I did the massaging. I cried. I really let it like release with breath, movement, sound, and all those mini courses I was finding, yoni massage and stuff. Here and there, the whole month of March, being in my bathtub for hours, you know? So yeah, I had my first clitoral orgasm, and I was like, oh, there must be more than this. And I heard about like cervix orgasm. So then, you know, I massages, I discover where my cervix are, and then I started to like do blended pleasure, so you can use a place where there is already pleasure and then create neural network through two places, and so then you could have pleasure from another place. So then I had my first cervix orgasm, and
how was it?
Oh my god, like every time I was like so proud, because you know,
is it much different?
Yeah, actually, and some people say there is not, because it's just about like stimulating the clitoris from the inside, but actually not. Like there is like a nerve ending in different places of the body, and there is nerve ending, like you can also have like anus orgasm, and you can have breast orgasm, so you can have cervix orgasm. And actually, because it says that this is the home of the Shakti Kundalini energy, this is deeper and more vulnerable, and also a lot of transgenerational trauma is stuck around the cervix. So a lot of de-armoring that you can do with like a... So the yoni egg is not that practical to do de-armoring, so you can buy like those sticks, you know, like with the stones, beautiful quartz, whatever. And you can massage around the cervix to release, so there can be a lot of things. So then when you have this orgasm, it's really deep. It's like ancient mystery related with the womb space, which is like this really deep dark space, you know, with the creation. So it's very, for me, yeah, it's like a deeper orgasm, something more vulnerable, more, you know, so I'm trying to find like if there's something about the womb being activated, the pleasure, you can have womb orgasm. And so You know, it's very different when you connect with the different energies in your body, you know? When you connect with the clitoris, it's more like, it's beautiful, you know? This I love clitoral orgasm. It's very sparkly, you know? It's very explosive. It's very, you know, you can see the energy. It's like we have different archetypes to play with. That's kind of like the princess, you know? Like, and the womb is more like the enchantress, you know? Like the witch. So then you connect with different type of vibration, you know? Yes, you can even have like a third eye orgasm. You know, when you go into Tantra, you know that orgasm is not about stimulation, physical. It's about energy. It's about your sexual energy that is moving, that is expanding.
Have orgasm just without touching something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that is like when you deepen and deepen and deepen your relationship with that energy, that you release all the shame so you can expand it, that it can be, so you can stimulate, but at the end of the day, that is an energy. So I remember the first time I had this orgasm without even touching myself.
And
yes, I did. Like I'm telling you, during that month, it went wild. It was like the best time of my life. Because I wanted to say this also, like, when you have something you struggle for so many years and you succeed to heal it, then you're unstoppable. Then you know you can do anything. You know what I mean? Mm. Like you feel so powerful.
Yeah.
So yeah, I struggled with this for so many years. Numbness, crying, like I didn't really explain that much with my partner and everything. But like really when I succeeded to have that and this and then that and exploring all these things, reading, practicing, I was mind blowing. And at first I was like, okay, maybe those Tantra, like people just want to have pleasure, but is it really something that is, you know, spiritual? And so I did this practice of like awakening my energy here in my lower chakra, sexual energy, so which feels like very desire and primal and all of this. And then I was practicing moving it up to every chakra. You know, you move it to the second chakra, then third, then fourth, like what we did for the throat, and then third eye. And at some point, I was in deep meditation.
Wow.
And it transformed into this deep state. And then at some point, and then at that point, I was like, okay, it is not bullshit.
Wow.
It's actually a path of sublimating, called as sublimation of energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like raw primal. And then you can take that energy and move it to settler energy. You can move it to your heart and circle it with your partner. And then it's really beautiful, eye-gazing, very vulnerable place. So that's primal, can become all kinds of different experiences you can have. So this is where then sexuality takes all forms. And it's in everything and everywhere, all the time. It's just like different frequency, you know, like of it, but it's all life force. This is what Tantra says. It's like at the end, it's all about this life force. So it comes from the same place, like we're born from this. Life is born from sexuality, you know. So that's what helped me also release the shame and everything. So when I was like, yeah, why are we holding such taboo around something that creates everything, that creates life, that's love, you know?
I think because of this, because it's so powerful.
Yes, and also because, yeah, there is shadow in it, and that can be, but I feel like putting more repression adds more of the shadow of it, you know? Like it's by sublimating it, by seeing it as love, then. And as they're releasing the shame, like people won't have to do all this weird stuff with it, you know? So I don't want to go into this whole, like, you know, complotist, like, why did we, yeah, did like this patriarchy religion and then, yeah, like, doing this as evil, like, I really don't get it. And there's something about it that I've been questioning a lot. I have been wanting to be able to explain this, like how shadow and light is part of life, And this is, yeah, even in the tantra, you know, in a place you have this compassion for all kind of things, the bad and the beautiful. There's no more judgment. There's, you know, this non-dual path is about, like, yeah, just embracing the darkness as the light, as this is part of life. So anyway, it exists, and but there is the light, and some people are sharing that light, and then it creates the balance, and I guess there is still a lot of healing with trauma, and however all this shit's been created and war and all of this comes from, you know, it's deep, 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 deep things that I am humble to say that I don't have the answer. But I discovered that, yeah, sexual energy is very beautiful if you stay in that place of awareness, because then I entered into this tantra world, like, wow, as I entered the yoga and meditative world, like, wow, this is amazing, it's gonna change the world, you know. And then I was like, oh, I see all the shadows and all the things and all the ways people can use it to make it bad for themselves. So tantra is the same. Like, at first I was like, oh my god, it's gonna heal humanity, it's amazing, I'm gonna go to all the tantra workshops and things, but still, you know, freeing yourself, and this is beautiful. But then I went into this expositive environments and polyamorous, like breaking all this conditionments to find, like, what do I want? What is true for me? So I guess, you know, this is a beautiful, beautiful spaces to explore, but also to stay conscious that, you know, sexuality is beautiful, but at some point also integrity and holding this energy for yourself and as something very sacred, then not sharing with everybody all the time, not like, you know, so. It's like I did many, many things. I've explored everything, I feel like, in this life. It's beautiful. But also, yeah, there is good and bad in all.
Yeah.
And I feel like what I'm telling and what's my truth might not resonate with somebody. And I'm telling you, follow your truth. Don't follow my words. It's just an inspiration. If that talks, if that resonates, but yeah, my journey doesn't have to be shared with everybody. So sexual healing, I got sub in March 2020, then all of the tantra world, and then I came back to my partner, and this was also another journey, because I had to see that even if I knew how to give me all this pleasure, and now I have all of this, I didn't really like what it was doing so much. And he was too fast, and he was too in his head, not in his body. And this is when I understood that it wasn't only my sexual trauma and my own sexual liberation. It was also him not being that evolved with it. Also, I needed to go through his own healing journey, and that's why together we went to this polyamory, because so
are
we
you still together?
No. So yeah, we had 3 years of monogamy, so we met again. He asked me actually to get engaged, and we also like we almost married each other and stuff. But yeah, then we've seen that there were this need for him to also go through his own now healing journey. So that's why, and also his healing journey was a bit different than mine, because for me, like, we could have gone through this together, but he liked, you know, kind of, he was like into BDSM, you know, and this kind of things. And so he needed to explore also on his own, you know, and we were so in love and so in communication and so in integrity, you know, where he was practicing also a lot of yoga. And so we were very, it was really a beautiful experience of going into those spaces to learn all those things, sexuality. And so that was really beautiful. I went to those BDSM spaces where actually it's going even deeper with the release of the shame, because you talk about like weird fantasies and all those things, and it's fine. And that all of you is accepted even in the darkest, weirdest place. So I think even if I'm not too much into BDSM, it healed something in me of like, even if I'm the weirdest freaking weirdos, I'm loved somewhere. And I freaking deserve to be, no matter who I am, I deserve that there is a place for me, there is belonging, there's those people there to freaking celebrate your shadows, da da da. And so, yeah, it's like, first accepting it is the first step. You know, it's like, it's not about staying in your shadows and your weird fantasy, because I realized that most of my fantasy were coming from my trauma. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's different readings about this and BDSM, where does it come from, why do you want to be beaten, you know, of course it comes back from, it comes to something. Doesn't mean it's bad and you shouldn't do it. That's about diving into this search of yourself, holding this space that is bigger, watching and integrity, but still, if you don't go, if you don't experience, if you don't face it, you will never heal it. Mm. So a place where they're like, we love you, even if you have those weird shadows, weird desire, weird things inside of you. So you are able to, like everything brings up to the surface, to then look at it, to then heal it, to then choose. Do, and so I allowed myself to dive into all those things, to be completely unashamed about the fact that one of my fantasies was to be raped, you know, and to not move, and my partner, yeah, and I was getting so excited, aroused about it. And at first I was ashamed and everything, but then when I released the shame that I allowed myself this, then I could choose. Before, you know, for some people in BDSM, it's like, only if I receive this, I can have pleasure. So then they go through this, but if you don't allow yourself, then you repress. You know, it's like this journey of like still going in there, even if it's not exactly, you know, where you want to go, but if you don't go, then there will be still places in you that you don't love. And as I said, healing is love. So once you can hold every aspect of yourself with love, then you have choice. If you don't love it, if you repress it, then it plays somewhere weirdly in your life, manipulating.
Yeah, control over you.
Exactly, because it exists. So the best way is to actually go meet it, go love it, go celebrate it. All those parts, like I had a big part of wanted to be seen, you know, like this need of validation I didn't have from my dad. So for a while I was not super conscious of it on those tantra spaces that actually like at first meeting those men, having like sexuality and stuff was very freeing, experiencing all kind of different touches beyond my partner, but still like being so in love that we were living together, and then we were going to the spaces, experiencing some stuff, and then we were coming back, living our lives, you know. It was really beautiful. And then yeah, he wanted to go more like BDSM and me tantra, so we separated. But like that was the most like fluid, beautiful relationship I've ever had, you know, like so beautiful. And so then, you know, I kept on going in those spaces, and then I realized, you know, at some point, like the search for validation, you know, when then I was freeing my body, completely free with my nudity, with my body, you know, like then with my sexuality, da da da, know what I like, say no, because you do that a lot in tantra spaces, consent, say no, in sex positive environments, you learn like non-verbal consent. So then you learn all those like tapping, so then the person take off their hands, you know, redirection. So I've learned many, many things in different spaces. So I think they're all very valuable. But if you kind of keep on going, or, you know, then you can also play some shadow. So the being seen and then becoming even more perfect, you know, because I'm so free, because I'm now, because blah, 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 blah. So then I can finally be loved. saw the needed for leader, like gaze and power bias and having many partners. And so then I was like, whoa, what am I doing here? Which wand is playing there? So yeah, then coming to that part of like, even if you are alone, so like sacred celibacy, you are loved, you are worthy, and even like retrograding, I don't know how to say this, slowing down the pace of like, I was like so free, singing, liberated, da-da-da, and then I actually was a protector. You know how like this, from something that was healing, then it becomes like your own kind, take it and make it something. So, then I was like, okay, then my space is actually to talk less, to take less space. And I remember that training where my, because we did like emotional liberation, screaming, I had no voice for 3 days. And so at some point I was seated and I had this fear inside of me of like, my God, people didn't hear you for 3 days, you didn't show up or nothing, so they're not gonna love you, you know, you're alone, nobody knows you. You know, like this fear of like, if I don't take space, if I don't show up, all my skills, singing, da-da-da, I'm not gonna be loved. Mm. And I was like, wow, this is my inner child, and now I'm like working a lot with her, finding the balance in between. Where is my authenticity, inspiration for people to show myself? And where is it where I'm protecting myself from being vulnerable and feeling worthy just as I am?
Yeah, just being.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow, that's deep.
So that's where I am. Wow. In my journey, yes. Wow.
Thank you. And how old are you?
32.
Wow.
Yes. So after this partner, because I guess that's also a cool story to say, but yeah, I was into this polyamory a lot, and at first with him, it was really beautiful. We learn, we grow. But then, yeah, I met a lot of like avoided attachment style in that environment, you know, because it's kind of like, oh, I can have many partners. So then the wound of the fear of being stuck, because maybe for this person, which I don't have this avoidant attachment style, but for this children, the love was suffocating, was overwhelming, was too much for the inner child, yeah, for the child. So then love is scary. Love will take away my freedom. That's avoidant attachment style, right? You were that? So maybe a mother or whatever figures who's been... The love will get myself away from my freedom. My parents didn't care at all. I was like the opposite. I could do whatever the fuck I wanted. Even with my dad, not being at home was better than being at home because of this craziness. And they didn't care about us. Like at 13 years old, I was outside in the street. I was like already, you know. But even, yeah, I just, it was scary to be at home, so better being away. So for me, I don't have this, but I met a lot of people like this in this environment. So I was like, oh my God, something that really freed myself and was really beautiful for my partnership to explore, and for so many people, it can be beautiful, can also be a way to bring yourself away from facing those parts of you.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so that's when I started to discover all those ways that you can use those things for, yeah, hiding yourself, but also I have compassion, you know, not everybody has the tools, but like some are leaders now that I know, leaders of those communities that, yeah, are just like pruning these things, like freedom over commitment and even like sexual, like a yeah, like freedom instead of like, yeah, being like finding this balance of what is really necessary to free yourself and where are you hiding yourself into this freedom and not actually looking. So for me, it's like whole journey of integrity all the time, awareness, why am I doing this, from which space. I guess as a therapist, it's easier for me. I have many tools to do this in spaces and stuff. But anyway, I'm saying this for people that want to try Tantra, I want to try all this space that is beautiful, but also gotta stay aware. Why am I doing it? From which place am I going? Am I going to take something to allow myself and to indulge in, you know? There is like hedonism of like indulging and coming from a place of like making your partner cry and naming this freedom, and love is beyond attachment, so using all the spirituality to then not look at yourself. It's called spiritual gaslighting, and I've been through that also. I've met like just pure avoidant attachment style, and then second partner avoidant attachment style, and on top spiritual toxicity, spiritual gaslighting. And because I had this inside of me also, yes, it did enter, and now I know about this very well, like how spirituality can be used to de-responsibilize yourself to actually go in those places, and that actually the women are like our oracles to bring in the face of those men. Like, where are you not committing? Where are you not present? Like, why are you giving me just like breadcrumbs in the name of freedom, in the name of spiritual non-attachment, love is beyond, then you're dependent. If you want me to, you should be your full responsibility of your needs, all those things that I'm saying, like, please be full responsible of your needs and your well-being, but using it in a way, you know what I mean? That actually de-responsibilize you from taking a necessary place in a relationship to be a good person, to be in integrity in your relationships, you know? No, I'm just consciousness, and I'm everything with all, and present moment. Why are you talking yesterday? You should be present in this moment, and all this bullshit, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So then, now I'm completely single, being my inner lover, focusing on building this business and my purpose. And whenever I'm gonna have time, he will arrive. I do believe for now I'm giving myself all I need and connecting with sisters and to men in a way that there is no, like, all the time this seduction, need for validation, eros everywhere, you know, and just being, yeah, supporting as human. Because at some point I was also gaslighting myself with I need to be complete on my own. You know, so rejecting this human need of socialization, because we're social creatures.
Yeah.
So anyway, I heal all those things. I know I'm a human, and being a human is divine and beautiful, and I need my people support me. I'm not this like warrior that do it all by herself, you know. So asking for what I need, still feeling that I deserve to belong, even if I'm wild and free and unapologetic, and how can this can be sent in the heart? How can you be free in your sexuality but still being very committed to the sacredness of it and what you deserve? Yeah, so beautiful journey so far. Keep on
working on this FOMO to commit to this business and all this inner teenager that is like, I just want to smoke and hang out at the beach.
Taking care of all those parts of me, giving them some space to express, hang out, you know? Because repressing it will make it even bigger. So embracing all those parts of you, giving them space. So yeah, that is it. I think I said everything.
Wow.
And I'm so grateful that you held that space for me, because this is really things that are like in my, I know I want to share the story, that I want to tell all this, you know? So it feels so good when finally it's recorded, finally I can have said all of those things that are so important for me.
Mm-hmm. You also need to make maybe some little videos on your Instagram.
Yes.
Or I saw you have a YouTube channel. I was your
really?
Third.
No, I don't have a YouTube channel.
You have. I saw a video. You have two videos there. Maybe you can. you create another one.
Yeah, of course, I will have to create.
You need to be seen from women and men too.
Yes, but then I need to really work hard with my inner teenager to be seated in front of the computer and do it and see what I'm doing. It's been 5 months, you know, it's a long journey to actually create this business. It's crazy. You see all those coaches online. And you're like, oh, that looks fun, you know, they have like the mini course and they have, and you're like, oh, they're lucky to have like 40k like followers, I want to be them. But when you're trying, I'm telling you, those people, I'm like, I'm bowing to your commitment. This is so much work.
For years.
So much work. And I'm just starting.
Yeah, sure. So. Me too. We are just...
Yes, I'm going to succeed.
Maybe we will have another episode in 3 years.
Exactly.
And then you can tell us about your... No, I don't say this for now. But I said it to you before. Okay, we can say it. I was on my scooter yesterday. It was so clear. It was so such a beautiful moment. I drive back home and then I was preparing myself for the interview and then I saw this vision, this, this 40,000 followers.
Yes, and now, it's, you know, there. To get to that place, you also need to be unashamed. You know, this is like this alignment, right? Like I want to be seen. I have something to say to the world. I have something, a medicine that needs to be seen. I'm deserving, right? And also, you know, like I remember being ashamed of wanting more followers because of the spirituality, like judging myself. Now I'm like, of course. Like, of course I want this. Of course it is amazing and beautiful. You know, not from a place of ego, because I still have this little girl that needs validation. No, she has my own validation. Now I'm doing it for something bigger. And
also for you. I think it's, I always say this, it's really important that we are our number one, you know, because there are a lot of spiritual people, they are just serving the world without ego. But we have an ego, and I think it's our most important, how can I say, being a human being, you know, that's the most important thing that we can do, because we are spirit and energy and love, but we are here to experience what is it about being human.
And actually I think it's very dangerous, as I said, like this guy that I had that was like avoiding, you know, working on himself because of this toxic spirituality of like, I'm consciousness, all of the mind, all of this is illusion, desire is bad thing, you can only be in the present moment. They are the worst people. Because why?
Spiritual ego is the most
Oh my god. Because like, okay, you should, you know, take care of your response, like, you should. So then I remember this video of Sadhguru being like, yeah, you are such like in blissful state, like on your own and stuff, that whatever people around, like, you're just like, yeah, this blissful all the time, you know, like there is no emotion, da, da, da. You're just like, and for this guy, it was like, yeah, I'm not touched, I'm not drawn, I'm not always, and so then, like, where is the compassion? Where is the nothing? No, I'm always good. I'm always up there, always is bliss, always is love. And with him, I went through abortion, like thanks to this baby that came to show me that was a good father for my child. So, and the day I was going through the abortion, it wasn't with me.
What is abortion?
Abortion is like killing the baby, you know, getting rid of the baby.
Yeah.
So I went through this, and he was, and on in parallel, he was posting on Instagram, I'm so grateful for this beautiful day. And I was like, I'm decided to leave the baby today. And he was like, yes, but life is amazing. Always grateful, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So super disconnected from reality.
His feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, no, no, there is no feelings, there is only gratitude, there is only love in this universe. So if even if you give death to our baby, I'm still going to be super grateful and smiling all the time. It was always like this.
And I'm like, was he really always like this?
Maybe I'm telling you, the dissociation was really bad. So much that I'm telling you, with all of my knowledge and everything I am, I needed time to get it. It was so profound. The spiritual bypass, the dissociation was so, for years of meditation, sitting up there and not looking, and like just allowing himself one day at a time to be who he was, like super independent, you know, like because of his parents, like when at a very young age, he was already out of the home, so by myself, nobody can bring me anything, so I'm alone, and you know, like very, wow, I've never met somebody with that kind of psychic structure ever. And every time I'm like, this is so funny because I have such a huge big mission on this earth to help people. So I have to experience all kind of ways that people can be people, you know? So I've met like crazy, wow, structures of psychology. He was so like lying to himself, so he couldn't see. And so me, I was like, I couldn't access. I every time, like I was looking at him, I was like, I can't know who you are. Like I can't access. I don't know what it is, you know? And in the same time, I'm very touched by, I think there is like a part of my soul that is very, you know, like in transcendence and in awakening. So I've always been very much attracted to that, or fascinated, or like all the men that are very much in devotion. It feels like they're connected to their heart, so it touches me. But actually, with him, it was coming from a fake place of like, yes, I'm in devotion. Like, even he said something to me once, like, you can do whatever to me, I'm not going to say anything. Mm. Like, you can be violent, I'm going to stay. You know, I'm going to be devoted to you. And I'm like, this is very toxic. So I was like trying to teach him. So I stopped doing that also because, you know, as a therapist, save your mood. So teach him, teach people, da-da-da-da. So I lose myself, I'm like, no. No more teachable person. I deserve the person that arrived, and that can inspire me. Yeah. At some point, this is why I left friends and everything, because I was tired of being the one inspiring. I'm so tired of not finding anybody to actually inspire me or raise me higher. Everybody was like, you're taking too much space, and like trying to make me smaller. And I was like, I need to get out of here. I need to find my community. I left everything, and it was really hard because I arrived and it was even worse. So I had to, even if nobody loves me, I'm gonna love myself. And this is where I came to that powerful place, is when I left everything believing that I was loved somewhere, and still I wasn't. Still the same comments I heard. And then at some point I started doubting, is it really me that is like not seeing my shadows? And but actually kept on moving. Now I'm at the right place where people love listening to me, be like, you have so much to bring to the world, and I'm celebrating, and I'm loving, and I'm like, finally, my soul is home. Thank you, Gopena. Yeah, thank you, Goa.
Wow. Yeah, and the right people, the right sisters, they want to see you even bigger.
Yes.
They don't want to see you smaller. Yes. Because you're too much. You are so much more.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is what I do, you know, and this is why, like, I really feel like those little parts of me love the fact that I'm doing it for myself anyway. But like, wow, having this reflection from people, like, that is what I'm saying at the beginning of my journey. You know, like this mirror and people, like, we're a social creature. We need the support of others. Mm-hmm. So let's support each other to be authentically, even imperfect, you know, and supporting people. And the only distinction of, like, I'm supporting imperfection in people is when they're willing to look at it. because I spent a long time with those people trying to teach them. But actually, I realized that they were just putting the blame on me, and I was doing the work, but they were not able to see, they didn't want to, they had no tools. And so at some point I was like, I'm not gonna love unconditionally, having compassion for people's imperfection. Only one condition is that they can do it from themselves, questioning themselves. Otherwise,
yeah, they have to be ready. They have to really wanna change something in their life because. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was amazing. I mean, this light is like it's getting crazy.
Do you want to say something to the end for our life?
I'm hot and I'm proud of us that, for bringing this information out there, we succeeded to, to stay in this heat light. We're very, very devoted. That's all I want to say, that I'm proud of myself, of my journey, and it's beautiful. Just I don't need to be humbled. I love myself so much, and I think I'm amazing. And I think, you know, like I've read something online that this is always about the balance, you know, like I always talk about this. So yes, you need to feel like you are the most gorgeous woman in the room and the most amazing person on the planet to be really taking the space that you need and bringing your medicine to the world and seeing the same in others.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to come with them because I'm the most amazing and it's like everybody else is less. No. I think we
own.
Yes. I'm the most gorgeous, amazing person on this planet, and I wish you feel the same.
Yeah.
Yeah!
Wow, that's amazing. I love it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, it was amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm so happy I said everything I wanted to say.